Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our Features Director. This week I caught up with Rose Darman, Managing Director of Darman Yachting. We talked Amels, Explorers, Custom Yacht Building, because Amels are now obviously stretching their arms into Custom Yacht Building again, which is very, very exciting. And even how she tried to escape the legacy of her famous name in her 20s by embarking on a career that had absolutely nothing to do with superyachting. So Rose is this week's interviewee, so stick around and hear more from her a little later. Meanwhile, I hope everyone is enjoying the football. It's certainly causing plenty of excitement in the Campbell household. Charlotte, have you been watching?
You know, I feel like this is going to be disappointing news, but no, I'm not a huge football fan. I like a bit of rugby, like a bit of cricket. I'm the worst kind of football fan in that I don't really follow it unless it looks like we might win something and everyone's going to the pub, at which point I suddenly show a sort of bit of last-minute enthusiasm. But a World Cup that I am going to be watching with interest is, of course, the World Cup of Superyachts.
That's right. Probably foolishly, we have decided to launch a World Cup of Superyachts, just to ratchet up the tension that everyone's enjoying with the Euros. So basically what we've done is we polled Boat International staff and we've kind of crowdsourced effectively this list of 16 iconic superyachts that we think will resonate well with the audience and which will go head to head in a competition to decide which boat you think should be crowned world champion of the inaugural World Cup of Superyachts. So there's a story on the website now, and very excitingly, we're going to do the draw on the podcast. Charlotte's going to be drawing names. To maintain the unimpeachable incorruptibility or uncorruptibility of this process. So Charlotte's got numbers from 1 to 16 written on scrunched up bits of paper that she'll pull out of a hat. I have a list of boats here with numbers assigned, and that's how we'll do the draw. So, I hope that makes some kind of sense. Should we give it a go? Should we do the draw?
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm ready. Ready to pull the very first superyacht for the World Cup of Superyachts. It's kicking off immediately. So the first one is 15.
15 is Maltese Falcon.
Oh, that's a good one.
So who will Maltese Falcon be going up against in the very first game?
Okay. And where do people vote on this? On Instagram, right?
No, they'll vote on the website. We'll have a story with an embedded poll, so you'll be able to vote on the website, but we'll obviously be directing people to that story from Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and all of the other social channels.
Right. Okay, Maltese Falcon up against number 11.
11 is Venus. Okay, that's interesting. Maltese Falcon playing the Fed ship Venus. Okay, so that's the first matchup.
Both very dramatic looking bows.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, next up we've got number 6.
6 is Eclipse, the big Blom and Voss.
Versus 18.
No way, there's only 16 numbers.
Oh, it's a 10, it's a 10. As I was saying it, I was like, not quite sure what the number is.
Wait, okay.
Oh, I have to do that again.
No, it's fine, don't worry. 10 is, we're definitely keeping that in. 10 is Dilbar. Okay.
Dilbar, okay.
Wow, okay, two
that
big.
That's a battle. Oh, I'm looking forward to seeing this unfold.
That's a big boat matchup, that is. That is the some of the bookies' favourites there. 6 v's 10. So that's Eclipse versus Dilbar. Oh, okay. That would be very interesting to watch.
I'm reading carefully now. Next is number 12.
12 is Talita.
Okay.
The classic from Krupp Germania Werft, built in 1930.
Versus 16.
16 is Ulysses. Okay. That's the big 116-metre explorer built in Norway. So that is a classic versus modern encounter.
Okay. Number 2.
Number 2 is Azam. The biggest, longest superyacht in the world, 180 metres.
I would be amazed if this didn't win. People love Azam. If there's anything anyone can vote on that involves Azam, people vote on it.
So who is Azam going to be up against?
Against number 3.
3 is Narlin. Okay. I think Narlin might edge that. We'll see.
Narlin's one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah, beautiful boat.
Yeah, it's a great story as well. Okay, next, number four.
Four is Kingdom 5KR. So that is obviously built as Nabila, latterly Trump Princess, and now Kingdom 5KR. So four plays.
Okay. Versus number five.
Five is Pelorus. Okay, the very famous, I think she's 114 metres long, Pelorus. Tim Hayward design, Terry Disdale interior. Yeah, 114, got it right. How about that? Said Pelorus. It's number five. Okay.
Okay, nearing the end now. Number 13.
13 is Sailing Yacht A. The controversial Sailing Yacht A. Love it or loathe it. Who's she playing?
That will be number seven.
Number seven is Motor Yacht A. No way. So there you go. Okay. Motor Yacht A plays Sailing Yacht A in the first round. That is that's interesting.
Two rounds left. Number eight.
Eight is Christina O.
Oh, that's a great boat as well.
Yep.
Christina O.
She's playing.
Number one.
Number one is Octopus. I thought Octopus was probably a favourite for this competition, but there's a lot of romantic attachment to Christina O. So
yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how these kind of beautiful old classic boats fare against the new bigger hitter. So that leaves the last two, and this is where we'll find out if our cunning system has worked or not. Number 14 and number 9.
Number 14 is Zeus, the class, another Blom & Voss boat. 36 not Zeus, born as Echo for Mexican billionaire Emilio Azcárraga. She's playing number 9, Black Pearl. Ooh, okay. So that is the draw completed.
God, there are some tough matches. Maltese Falcon versus Venus, Eclipse versus Dilbar, Azam Narlin. Those are all, I can't tell which way they'll go.
No, nor can I.
Maybe we should also start a betting site on the side, because I quite like quite like to get some kind of pool going on this as well.
Yeah, we could. That might be a new income stream for boats. Super yacht betting, boat betting.
Boat betting, done. Get the logo made.
All right, we'll get Chris Whale on it. Okay, well, Sailing Yacht A against Motor Yacht A. Did not see that one coming. That's going to be an interesting one for the readers, listeners and viewers to decide upon. So that's our draw.
Winners from this round then go into the semi-finals?
Quarterfinals.
This is why I don't watch football. No understanding.
The first two rounds will be decided on Monday and Tuesday next week. That's the 28th and 29th of June. Then later that week, we'll do the quarterfinals. Then we'll do the semis and the final week starting the 1st, I think. It's all written down in very usefully in a story on the website. Week starting the 5th, rather. But we'll put the draw as well in the story so you can see the matchups. And you can see which, your favourite, see how they'll progress and who they'll face in later rounds. That'd be really interesting. Okay, I've got my favourites. I've got a few ideas about who will do well and who will do badly, but I don't want to prejudice things. So I'll leave it to you guys to decide.
Maybe we should ask you now to predict who you think will win. We'll see if you're right at the end of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, I just got a feeling about Octopus.
Really?
I think she'll do really well. I think given the cool stuff Paul Allen did with her, discovering the bell of HMS Hood and discovering the Japanese battleship Musashi all on this super yacht, I just think, for me, that kind of puts her above a lot of the competition. But we'll see. Right, that is the draw for the first World Cup of Super Yachts. Let's move on. Charlotte, what's going on in your world at the moment?
Well, I've been out and about this week, which is great, having spent a lot of time behind a laptop over the pandemic. So it's great to be out and seeing some good faces from the industry again. But one feature I've been working on at the moment is to do with great yachting cities, which I'm really enjoying seeing the research come through for that. And I think the thing is, we all love, you know, hanging on the beach. So there are some incredible sort of more urban yachting destinations that are often overlooked, I think, because it's just not what people first think about. But we've got an incredible squad of local yachties reporting back from different cities around the world with some places that you might not have thought of before, but you really should, because there's some great stuff going on there. The one I've been reading about this week is Hong Kong. So For Hong Kong's yachting industry, COVID-19 has been a bit of an unexpected, but a big boost. Lots of locals have been discovering the private beaches, including Double Haven, Clearwater Bay, Grass Island, and a place called Long K Wan. And there's even a broker who's quoted in the piece who says about yachts, everyone wants one. So they've been flying off the shelves. But at the moment, obviously, yachting in Hong Kong is limited to a certain extent. There's only the Gold Coast Yacht and Country Club and Lantau Yacht Club that have marinas equipped to house really big boats. But all eyes are on the Greater Bay Area. There's a really ambitious project there that aims to turn Hong Kong and Macau and 9 neighbouring cities into a trading zone and an economic powerhouse that's valued at a staggering $1.6 trillion. So this huge valuation is partly because there are currently no shipyards and there's not really the infrastructure in Hong Kong to build super yachts. But once there is, it's estimated that the number of super yachts in Hong Kong, which are at the moment mostly owned by local and mainland Chinese tycoons, will probably triple. So there you go, that's something to think about for a future itinerary, especially for serious art lovers. There are some really serious galleries out there and a lot besides.
I mean, if you look on AIS, you can see there is quite a lot of activity around Hong Kong, but you'd expect it to be more given its location and given the proximity of mainland China and its vast wealth. I mean, we know kind of the mainland Chinese wealthy are discovering super yachts in greater numbers than they ever have, but it's still pretty slow going. A lot of that money flows into Phuket as well, in Thailand, obviously. But yeah, it's exciting to hear that there's talk of further developing the yachting infrastructure in Hong Kong, because it is a special, special place. So when can we see that feature, Charlotte? When's that going to be in the magazine?
That's going to be towards the end of the year, so probably around December. We're doing a lot of research, so there are loads of cool new restaurants and galleries and events included and all the sort of latest openings. So look out for it towards the end of the year.
Okay. We'll flag that as well as we come a bit close to the time. Alrighty, let's move on with the headlines. And the first one is starting on a downbeat note, the news this week.
I was sad to see it. Yes, the 182.9-metre research expedition vessel Rev Ocean, which we've talked about on this podcast before, has been delayed by 3 to 5 years and will not set sail until at least 2024, the team behind the project have said. The Rev team revealed that the project, which was originally set to launch next year, has been beset by delays caused by the yard and could potentially not be in operation until 2026. A statement posted on social media said, "We have been hoping the situation would improve, but compounding issues are causing further setbacks. We have not received a timeline for when a compliant ship will be delivered." The statement cited technical and weight problems with the construction, which is currently underway at Vard Shipyard in Norway. The issues mean Rev Ocean is, in their words, not in accordance with the specifications in the shipbuilding contract. This comes after the Rev Ocean team told us last year that construction on the project had already been slightly delayed by the coronavirus pandemic. The record-breaking build is set to complete construction at Lloyd Werft in Germany, which will support the owner's team in the installation of the interiors, painting of the superstructure and assembly of the outer ceilings. So looks like we're going to have to hang on and wait a bit longer to see that one.
Yeah, gutted to hear this, really. I mean, it was supposed to be next year we were going to... I think that was in the original plan. She was going to be delivered in 2022. So, well, not at least until 2024 and not in operation until 2026. I mean, the whole team must be absolutely devastated. But yeah, it was a slightly strange way to hear about it, really. It was just a lengthy post on the Rev Ocean Instagram account, a statement from the team, basically... laying the blame pretty squarely at the door of the shipyard for the delays. So yeah, we'll keep you posted and we'll keep watching the situation. I mean, it's kind of catch 22, isn't it, really? If they pull the boat out of Vard and cancel the contract, they'll have to take it somewhere new that's available, that's got a slot, that's got, that can take a project of that size, and there's not many of them in the world. So the rock and a hard place, really, for the team. So anyway...
I remember when I was speaking to them for the piece last year, they'd had the coronavirus pandemic and that had a bit of a knock-on effect, but they were doing really well. But the main thing is a boat like this has never really been done before. There are huge things that they're just trying to work out. There's no blueprint for what they're doing. So in a way, it's not that surprising that it's taking a while. And I guess it's worth taking the time to get it right.
Yeah, it certainly is. And look, nothing changes. It will still be one of the most incredible vessels on the water anywhere in the world when it's finally delivered and doing great works for our understanding of the oceans. In other news this week, leading UK superyacht designers have reacted to the news that the government plans to commission a national flagship yacht, with many declaring their interest in designing the project. Just candidly, I still can't quite believe this is happening, but apparently Boris is very much pushing ahead with the idea. So plans for the flagship, which is intended to boost British trade around the world, were revealed early this month by the government to replace Royal Yacht Britannia, which was decommissioned in 1997. So there's been a price tag of $200 million has been floating around, and a really tight build schedule, with construction slated to begin next year and the ship expected to enter service within the next four. So the team did a ring round of some great British design studios to have a chat with them to see what they thought about it. So Winch Design, Gresham Yacht Design, Michael Leach Design all said they'd love to get involved. While Tim Hayward counted himself out. Look, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Leave this up to the government, and I think they'll make a pig's ear of it. But they tap the expertise of the UK superyacht sector, and it will surely be a much, much better project. So I really, really hope, and I think I've said it on the podcast before, I really hope they're reaching out to some of the amazing talent we have in this country in the designing and manufacture of superyachts. So all these designers agreed that it is absolutely possible to build the yacht in the UK. They did also raise doubts that they think it can begin construction next year. Hayward said, "The whole thing needs to be designed to current and new possible regulations, and it needs to be done carefully. I've had projects where the design process has lasted 5 years and the construction took three." He also questioned the £200 million price tag, saying it depends what they want to build. If it's going to be a mini cruise liner, then maybe they can do it for 200 million, he said. But I suppose the implication being that if they want it to be a superyacht standard, a real kind of marquee vessel, best in class kind of construction with designer technology being the best it can be, it's going to cost a lot more than 200 million.
Well, we'll finish the news on some good news. Lursen's 122 meter Project Jag has had her technical launch. The yacht hit the water for the first time on June 22nd and was traditionally launched on a slipway. She was commissioned by an experienced client as a replacement for his 96-metre superyacht, guesses on a postcard. Project Jag is the owner's third Lursen. It was sold by Moran Yacht and Ship in 2019. Project Jag is one of the largest superyachts under construction in the world and features an exterior by Venice-based Nuvolari Leonard and an interior by Raymond Langton. Scheduled for delivery in 2023, the yacht features accommodation for 20 guests in 11 cabins. The crew quarters, meanwhile, will accommodate staff of 40. Other key details include a beam of 17.8 metres, creating extraordinary volumes, and the standout features are pretty amazing. There's going to be a helipad, beauty salon, spa, sauna, swimming pool, indoor and outdoor cinema, dance floor, gym and lift. There'll also be ample room for tenders and toys, including a sailing dinghy, sea bobs, sea scooters, windsurfers, and a submarine. So a pretty cool boat.
Project Jag is rather giving the game away, isn't it? I mean, if Jag, Jaguars, etc., I'll leave the rest up to your imagination, listener. But there you go. Really interesting project. Can't wait to see that one. Talking about owners, actually, they are the subject of this week's data story. So we're going to look at the 50-metre plus fleet and specifically who owns these boats, not individuals, of course, but looking more broadly at nationalities. So there are currently 820 superyachts in excess of 50 metres LOA on the water. And when we look regionally at who owns those boats, it's really interesting. So Europe, not including Russia, owns the biggest chunk. 32.6% of all superyachts over 50 metres are owned by Europe as a whole. Then comes North America, which owns 23.5% of all superyachts over 50 metres, followed by the Middle East on 12.6%. However, Europe doesn't look so good when you flip and you look at things at a national level. If you do this and look at just which countries own the most superyachts, the USA leads the world. So American owners own 21.7% of all yachts over 50 metres. Russia is second, accounting for 10% of the global 50-metre plus fleet, followed in third place by the UK, small but mighty, whose nationals own 7.6% of all superyachts over 50 metres. So there are more UK owners than Saudi owners or owners from the UAE, which actually surprised me. Saudis own just 3.9% of yachts over 50 metres. But while the US might sit at the top of the tree in terms of raw numbers, Americans own smaller boats on average compared to second place Russia. So the average size of the American boats over 50 metres, 65.7 metres, and the figure for Russia is 80 metres. Other surprises? Well, there are more Turkish owners of 50 metre plus boats than German owners. And there are more Australian owners of boats over 50 metres, 11, than Chinese at 8. Although you wonder how long that will remain the case. Interestingly, half of all these owners choose to fly a Cayman flag on their boats. 47.4% of the 50 metre plus fleet is flagged in the Caymans. Anyway, hope you found that insightful. That is it for this week's data story and all the news. Go have a look at the website to see the draw for the World Cup of Super Yachts, and stay tuned for my interview with Rose Darman. Rose, thanks for joining Boat Briefing. So tell us a bit more about how you got into the business, because obviously you carry the Darman name, which probably adds a bit of weight of expectation to your professional life. But how did you kind of get into the yachting side of things?
Yeah, that's right, Stuart. I mean, I grew up literally at the shipyard, of course. I mean, I remember playing here in the weekends, you know, or sometimes even joining my dad on one of his business trips. So I grew up in shipbuilding. And I guess that's also maybe the reason why when I graduated and was in my early 20s, all I wanted to do was to get away from yachting, or not just yachting, I mean shipbuilding, get away from Holland, get away from Damon, get away from the family business, you know, do my own thing. Yeah, which I did for close to 10 years. Then I graduated from my MBA when I was 29, 30. And then I thought, okay, I should maybe I should give the family business a try. But, you know, it was more like, okay, I don't want to be, you know, 50, 60 and then think, oh, what would my life have been like if I had joined the family business? So I thought, you know, I'll just give it a go. It's more out of curiosity for a year. And then, you know, if I don't like it, yeah, it's just 1 year in my CV. I can still, you know, go back into finance, because that was actually the industry I was working in before, is based out of London. But yeah, I really love working in the family business. So initially, I did a project in the Americas for naval project. So I started with the gray vessels, and then I wanted to, you know, find a more permanent role in the company. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I did know I did not want to sit in our head office, you know, at the end of the corridor where my father and brother were also had their office. So I wanted to have some distance. And then actually it was my brother Arnaud who came up with the idea, you know, to go to Vlissingen and join our yachting division, Amels, the main brand. And that's how I ended up there and started working there with Rob Leyendijk, and yeah, still here 5 years later.
But now you're running the show.
But yes, but with a team. And yeah, you know, what I really love about this job is that it really is teamwork. And it's like, you know, one of the reasons for me actually to start here was that this part of our company was run like a mini Damen, in a way that, you know, we are a company where we have basic control over all the different processes, from sales to design to engineering to construction, all the way through customer care. Yeah, that makes it really great. And I think, yes, yeah, since then we have grown, and we've grown into different areas, not just sort of the traditional white yachts, but also the yacht sport vessels and the expedition yachts. And it's just been, yeah, not easy, but a really, really fun ride, and mostly because of the team and the people I work with. Yeah, but also, you know, I think the industry is super exciting, meeting all kinds of interesting people, and yeah, so really enjoying it still.
But I think it's really interesting that, I mean, it can't have been easy growing up with such a famous family. I mean, the Darman Group in shipbuilding is as big as it gets, and then like many kind of scions of great industrial names, you did your very, very best to not get involved in the family business, and you were very successful in the finance industry, like you said. But it's funny that, like, it was irresistible. Sooner or later, you found your way back to yachting or shipbuilding.
Yeah, but I'm, you know, because a lot of people ask me, oh, now that you end up working in shipbuilding anyway, don't you regret spending those years in finance rather than, I don't know, working also in shipbuilding and you know, specializing even more? And I certainly don't. But, you know, if you think about what's the most important reason, probably I don't, is exactly, you know, everyone's sort of expecting me to work in the family business. And also a lot of people, you know, tell me, Rose, you know, because, you know, women in yachting is always a topic, and they say, yeah, but Rose is not a good example because she's only there because of her last name, which is, by the way, true to a certain extent. But I guess because of that, it was really important for me to work outside of the family business for a good number of years. And, you know, at least I know that if I didn't have, you know, the family business and support from the family, I would have been fine too.
Yeah.
So that I guess from a confidence point of view, that's it's important for me.
Yeah, I completely understand that, how you felt like you had to kind of prove yourself. Is that fair in another industry? And, you know, you stand on your own two feet and all that kind of thing before, because presumably if you'd wanted to work in the Darwin group, you could have done from the second you left university.
Yeah, and I'm really glad I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just, I guess, that sense of independence, and yeah, it's important.
And in the 5 years you've been there, it's interesting how, because I obviously pay a lot of attention to the brand image and the social media and the marketing outlook and projection of the group, and you now front a lot of that activity. So, I mean, if you were to associate someone, a single figure, with the Darwin Yachting, it would very much be you, because you're seen across all the channels. And was that kind of a deliberate, or would that just happen naturally?
Well, for sure, FedShip or Lursen probably wouldn't hire me. It's very unlikely. So it's a little bit deliberate, but on the other hand, it's not just me. I mean, it's sure. Really the team, and it's teamwork, and we, yeah, I think there was also a time, you know, when maybe I was struggling a little bit, because, you know, it took a little bit of time to build a team. But I think, yeah, today we're in a really good place, and just have a strong team. They won't miss me when I go on holiday later this summer.
Well, I mean, Rob's fantastic. I mean, he's been in the business a long time, and obviously great contacts across the industry.
Yeah, I've learned so much from him. Yeah, still do, actually. And it's a very good team.
Do you think your period outside the business gave you some advantages? In so when you did come in, you could look at things a bit differently, you could apply different rules, you could say we should be doing this instead of that. I mean, I'm just trying to think that the structural changes or directional changes or marketing changes that you've helped steer since you've rejoined the group.
Yeah, well, I mean, I worked as an investor, so definitely had, you know, maybe a little bit of a different view. But I guess the most important thing I learned during those years is that shipbuilding is not a good business to invest in. Which, if you want to become rich or want to make a lot of money, choose another path. But, you know, it's a way of life. I guess, you know, risk management is for sure an important thing in our business. And I mean, it's also what our business model was built on, and actually already part of the philosophy that my father developed for the Damen Group, where we of course focus on on standardized technical platforms, and then in yachting in combination with a custom luxury interior. And you know, that's not just because we think it's a good choice for customers, because you know the product becomes better every time you build one. But also from a risk management perspective, as a business, to make sure, you know, if you've built a project before, you know how much it's going to cost, you know how long it's going to take. You know, you don't want to have a delay in projects, because if that happens, you know, we have a very tight schedule, doc schedule. The next project, you know, needs to go in, and delays are basically not good for your business. But there's a lot of risk management behind that as well. You know, I must say, luckily, it hardly ever happens. But if you would ever have a cancellation or something from a client, then you have a product that you can easily resell again in the market. But the same, of course, for our clients. If there would come a day that they wanted to sell their yacht, then it also works better with a standardized norm. Yeah, so risk management for sure is an...
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that applies very much to the limited edition series. So to people unfamiliar with limited editions as a concept, how would you describe that series of boats?
Yeah, so, you know, it really is a platform that we have developed, which is standardized. So basically, you know, you can't move technical spaces around or the engine room, things like that. But with the luxury spaces, yeah, we can offer flexibility, and it allows us, of course, to build faster, but also to build better product in the end. And we build on stock. So we start building without a client. Currently, the market is, quite crazy, I'd say. So we do not have so much on offer with short delivery times like we usually have. But yeah, that's an important side of it, you know. And people often ask, you know, what are your biggest competitors? And for us, probably our biggest competitor is the secondhand market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want a super yacht quickly, AMLs usually can help you out because, like you said, I mean, that speculative production is a part of the business model. So
yeah, usually we have delivery times, within 4 to 12 months. And currently the wait's a little bit longer. It's about 2 years.
Wow. So if you wanted, say, a 180 now, you'd be waiting 2 years.
Yeah.
Well, that goes to show you. So, I mean, we've heard all the stories about how good the brokerage market is at the moment. So obviously you guys are feeling that too. So it's a good time to be in boat building at the moment for AMLs.
Yeah, and then not just for AMLs and Damen, but also for the other players. It's definitely, I think, something that we currently see across the market. I guess, you know, because a lot of people ask me, you know, why and what's the psychology behind it. I mean, I don't know, but I do think that yachting is all about family time and spending time with your closest friends, and I think people did realize during COVID that family and sort of your close friends are the most important people around you, so they want to spend more time with that bubble. Yeah, and yachting is a great way to do so.
Yeah, it really is. And I agree with you. I struggle to give a great answer to that question. So why is the market so good right now? And you can't really attribute it. It's like currency exchange movements or oil prices. Or there's no kind of academic or definitive. It's just a kind of people perhaps, like you said, just wanted to spend time in a safe environment with friends and family. It's kind of as loose as that, I suppose.
Yeah, and life is short.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of the AMLs history. So obviously custom building was a big part of your past, and then the limited editions were such a phenomenal success. How many 180s have you made to date?
We've delivered 25 now. Yeah, and we now, basically, we have the AMLs 60. It's not really the successor, but sort of our new successful design. And there's already proven to be quite successful on the market.
And it's interesting now because so there's the bedrock of the limited edition series with a proven market that sell well, and now we're seeing a few more kind of tendrils, offshoots. So we've got the Sea Explorers, we have the new custom boats coming out. We've got a Project Signature, your biggest ever build at 125 meters. Congratulations, by the way. A new limited editions range designed by Espen. So there's a lot going on, I guess. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, we decided to get back into full custom, but we, you know, I think the majority of our business will, for sure, the majority of our business will always remain what we call then the limited editions. On the other hand, we've grown as a business, and we have seen a lot of repeat clients, and at some point also some repeat clients who wanted to go bigger. And for them, we are definitely open for full custom. At the moment, you know, our aim is sort of one full custom project a year, because we believe that's a good balance, you know, also not to, as a business as well, so that the standardized platform formula still remains our main business, our core business. But yeah, and I guess, you know, what we've seen, for example, Here Comes the Sun was kind of our first full custom. I mean, she's not full custom in a way that we owned the design, so we could build basically a sister yacht if we wanted to. But it was a project that was started together with a client, with a repeat client. It was, I guess, a successful project for all parties involved, and yeah, it's also been very positive for the branding of the Amos brand. So yeah, for sure, we see that's sort of more the potential that we see in full custom market. We will not let go of the limited editions concept for sure.
No.
I think, you know, one other development that we see, and I guess it's also something that we'd like to see more, is the expedition yachts, the Sea Explorer, where we basically teamed up, we collaborated with EOS to promote, you know, exploration, also education, about the oceans. And I think sometimes the image of yachting is not the most positive one, maybe also because we tend to be a little bit shy, you know, to give too much, to share too much information. And yeah, but on the other hand, what we see, our typical clients, that's absolutely not, it's different, because most of them are ocean enthusiasts, and, you know, they love exploring the oceans, and they, almost all of them, are engaged in sort of giving back as well. Yeah, we think, as a company, we also want to contribute to inspire more people to become ocean enthusiasts.
Have you been surprised about the success of the Sea Explorer range? Because there's three on the water now, or is it just two?
Three sold and two on the water, two delivered. Yeah, I mean, it's not really surprised at all, actually, because I think the trend sort of towards more exploration and longer trips and yachts or ships looking sort of for more autonomy for longer periods of time was already something that, you know, that we were seeing. People wanted to bring more toys and gear, you know, have a more active lifestyle. You know, obviously submarines have been really on the rise in our industry. So I guess, yeah, this fits in perfectly. I think, you know, ROD was really more, okay, because you saw already a lot of conversions in the market, let's design something that's more purpose-built. Yeah. And that's also, in some terms, you know, more practical. Like on our Sea Explorers, typically the technical spaces have also technical finishes, as we also have on our commercial vessels. And yeah, just makes it more practical. But on the other hand, I guess, yeah, the guest spaces are, you know, same level as you'd find on board any Amos yacht. And now it's really exciting, you know, to see, you know, what are these clients going to do with their vessels. And yeah, I guess Anima is a very private vessel, but La Dacia, she's doing charters. And very successfully, she's one of the most successful charter yachts, already fully booked a year ahead, before she even left the shipyard.
Yeah, La Dacia is phenomenal. And her owner's not shy as well, which is, I suppose, you know, great for the company, because it, you know, brings a lot of eyeballs attracted to the Sea Explorer range, so which can't hurt, I suppose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it's great, and also for us, it's very exciting, you know, to see how the guests are enjoying her amazing trips.
So the group as it's set up, so Amos obviously does the limited editions range, and then the Sea Explorer range kind of falls slightly more under the Damen umbrella, or Damen yachting rather.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe to briefly explain. So Amos, the company, was actually founded back in 1918 by the Amos family. At some point, the yacht was also owned by Donald Trump. And then we. And then we, Damen bought Amos in 1991. So Amos has been part of the group now for 30 years.
Damen buy it off Trump.
No, we didn't buy. No, we didn't buy it off Trump. Yeah, there was another owner in between. Yeah, but there were, of course, good stories about about that time. we now basically have a division within Damen, which is basically called a yachting division. And when we developed sort of the newer product lines in the yacht support range and the Sea Explorer range, we didn't want to use the Amos brand. We thought it would be better to use a different brand for that. And so there, basically, we used the Damen yachting brand, but it's one company, one team, and basically one yachting division within the Damen group, where we do everything, the Amos yachts and the Sea Explorers and the yacht support range, as well as refit activities. Yeah, and then within the Damen group, we have other divisions such as naval workboats repair.
And it was from that kind of workboat world that the yacht support kind of hull effectively was kind of transitioned across. And now the yacht support concept has become a massive part of the business, or a growing part of the business, at least. There's a lot more of them on the water all the time.
Yeah, that's true. So I think, you know, the collaboration, of course, with the rest of the group is absolutely there. And for one of the things that we use, of course, is R&D, is something that we do at group level. And you're right, the hull for the yacht support vessels came from our high-speed craft, our workboats division, where it was actually developed as a fast crew supply vessel for the offshore oil and gas industry. And basically, the first yacht supports, we literally took that hull, added stabilizers, a teak deck, a big crane, and a swim platform. And now this product has really evolved, and is a lot more than just that, but that's kind of how it started. And then we saw the owners using it in different ways, and it's a very flexible platform, and you see both going with big yachts, but we also see owners of smaller yachts, like below 500 GT, still having a 55 meter yacht sport to carry toys and anything from toys to crew to grandchildren.
Well, and some of them are set up as yachts in themselves. A Game Changer was basically refitted to serve as not a support vessel, but a super yacht in itself.
Yes, absolutely. That you see as well, I guess. See hybrid versions being developed as well. Game Changer is super fast vessel.
And the owner of Axis runs a big Westport as well. And I remember he told me once that his two kind of 50 meter boats, well, actually the support boat's bigger than the mothership, but he's got friends with 100 meter boats, and he told me that he was laughing at them because they had to anchor miles offshore, whereas with his two smaller boats he got kind of combined length of over 100 meters, but obviously with both of them he could get much closer to the beach, basically. So depends on where you're cruising in the world, but it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility, and you can really carry a lot on board, and you can even change, because I know this owner, for example, after the hurricane in the Bahamas, they really had a great project providing humanitarian aid support, and put on containers with water and food and things to help out. So
as someone who's still a younger professional in the yachting industry, the demographic tends to skew older, obviously, because people make the money required to buy a super yacht later in life. But there is a lot of new kind of West Coast tech money coming into the industry now. So I guess the question is, how do you see the industry changing or supporting that market? I mean, how are you accessing that, crucially, that kind of younger tech entrepreneur market?
So we see that trend indeed. For us, it's good news, because our product portfolio is tailored towards that more active lifestyle. I think that's something that we'll see to continue. I mean, often entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs, are still, busy sort of with their daily job, so they tend to appreciate short delivery times and sort of the more standardized platforms that we offer. And it's also great to see, I think, that we can also interest them in exploring more and seeing more of the of the oceans.
I mean, the cliche kind of goes that the younger owners would be more interested in the kind of in the exploration vessels or the Sea Explorers that you guys are building. Is that a fair cliche? Is it a cliche for a reason?
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and you know, that for sure they want to bring more toys, but very often you see they're also happy to bring on scientists, for example, on board when they have a spare cabin, and are also engaged with that community. And I think, yeah, that's also a match, of course, you know, where we would like to see this industry go.
Well, and you guys obviously built, you know, what could be, you know, reasonably called the most advanced Explorer stroke research boat, or you rebuilt her as an Ocean Explorer. Of course, I'm talking about Ocean Explorer, which is a fantastic boat out there doing very good works and, you know, discovering new things about the oceans all the time.
Yeah, I mean, organizations like OceanX, but I think also RevOcean, yeah, they are really great examples for me, also in terms of, you know, collaboration, being very transparent about their mission, sharing data and so forth. And I think, yeah, they could really make a difference in this world. And you know, we are proud to be part of that where possible.
Yeah, yeah, it's a brilliant initiative. I love seeing their social media, actually. They've got a really good, really good social media.
Yeah, I always read it and I always learn new stuff, like every day. There's like, you know, stuff written about new species or things about existing species that I didn't know. It's really fun fun to follow. My daughter loves it too.
Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant. Rose, I'm just very aware that the time's creeping up to half an hour. I've probably kept you for long enough, but what's your prediction for the autumn show season? Have you got any insights?
Yeah, that would be really interesting to see. I think, you know, we're looking forward to it for sure, you know, to see everyone again, to be out traveling again. But on the other hand, you know, I think everyone's also reflected a little bit during the past year. Yeah, I mean, the industry has done okay without the boat shows. I still think, you know, for us to have a platform, especially for our business model, to have a platform where you can show your products, there's, you know, there's absolutely nothing that compares to sort of showing the real thing. No brochure model or anything else you can do can really compare to that. So I think we will still continue to have the boat shows, but I think maybe we'll see, you know, a bit of a change there as well in the way everyone, shipyards, but also the organization, will go about the boat shows.
Yeah, I think so. But I think the industry is desperate for a boat show, frankly. I think everyone just would like to see each other again in person.
Yeah.
But before then, of course, it's the World Superyacht Awards. So we'll see you in Monaco on the 5th of September.
See you on the 5th of September. Looking forward to that.
It will be a great event, and very best of luck to you guys at that event.
Thanks. Thanks, Stuart.
Well, Rose, it's been great. Absolute pleasure as always. And yeah, hopefully see you soon.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.